From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump administration has just released a new regulation to curb legal residency for those immigrants who would be eligible to obtain it but who use public assistance, including Section 8 housing and food stamps. The regulation was announced on the website of the Department of Homeland Security, and it claimed it's merely about enforcing an existing law that, quote, promotes self-sufficiency and protects American taxpayers. Earlier leaked drafts of the proposal had been circulating in the media, already provoking fear in immigrant communities. Advocates of immigrants denounced the regulation, calling it an attack on families, and saying that it encourages a pay-to-play system and privileges wealthy immigrants. My guest is Erin Quinn. She's a senior staff attorney at the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. Welcome to the program, Erin.
Thank you, Sonali. It's great to be here.
So let's try to understand what it is that's being proposed. And I know that your organization and others have sort of been preparing for this because of those leaked drafts that I'd mentioned that the press had already been covering. It shouldn't surprise us that this is what Trump is doing. But what exactly is the kind of public assistance that the Trump administration is saying immigrants now cannot be on if they have any hope of becoming legal residents?
Yeah, that's a really important question. The first thing I would want to highlight is that right now, everything we're talking about is just a proposal. So no laws have changed yet. And this is really important to us because I think one of the main points of all of this rhetoric and even this proposed rule is, as you say, an attack on families. And so even by releasing this rule that has no effective law, the consequences are dire for families that are afraid, and we're seeing disenrollment from major services, even from those that it does not affect. To get to your question, the main new target of this proposed rule are those that are using Medicaid and housing supplements. Our laws already incur penalties for folks that are reliant on cash aid systems. The difference here is a vast expansion to include major safety net programs that we all rely on to keep our communities safe and healthy, including Medicaid, housing, as well as nutrition programs like SNAP, so supplemental nutrition, or food stamps.
It seems to me that there are two major assumptions that the government is making here. One, that immigrants don't pay into taxes and don't pay into the federal treasury that these services come from. And that two, the corporations and employers don't take advantage of undocumented immigrants by paying them so little that they can't afford some of these really important services. Are those two huge assumptions that are, of course, lost in the conversation and especially the anti-immigrant rhetoric coming out of the White House?
Definitely. And I think some other really important strains here are that, in fact, those immigrants that are legally using programming in the first place, which is the target of this law, are generally not people that are just now coming forward to get their permanent resident status, which is really what this law is about. So really what we're seeing is an amplification of a negative message about immigrant families using services when in fact that actually isn't even the underpinning of the legal weeds of this law. Folks that are applying to become permanent residents, many of whom don't actually even have access to these programs in the first place.
Right. So it's not, I want to sort of look at the language that the Department of Homeland Security is using when it talks about this regulation, which feeds into these sort of misconceptions that the White House has promoted. The DHS's proposal on their website, the press release, said it was a new proposed immigration rule to enforce longstanding law that promotes self-sufficiency and protects American taxpayers. Erin, this idea that by being on public assistance somehow undermines your ability to be self-sufficient, isn't that the same logic that conservatives have used for Americans in general who have used welfare programs?
Certainly. And I think the data generally shows that these safety net programs only create a more thriving workplace, more productive citizens, and a more cohesive and safe community. It's why we have safety net and public health programs in the first place. The one true nugget about that preamble offered by the government with this proposal is that it is true that in some form or another, a law about an immigrant's use of public services has been on the books for centuries. What's different here is the broad-scale attack on these programs that we rely on to keep our communities whole and safe. It's a much broader attack, and it actually takes us away from some very set in stone policies and standards that have helped guided us through these decisions for hundreds of years.
What benefit has public assistance been for immigrant communities? I imagine that it's not used that widely because already undocumented immigrants live in fear. Even under Obama, they lived in fear. And so I imagine that when an undocumented immigrant does participate in a public assistance program, they do so when they literally have nothing else left, and sort of, have to weigh the costs and the risks involved. I can't imagine that it's a very widespread, phenomenon.
I would think that's true. There's a couple points that are really important there. One is that this law is really about one particular immigration law around what it means to be admissible or allowed to enter the United States or get your green card. It doesn't actually affect all immigrants. And folks that are in that situation don't actually have eligibility for these programs. So this law doesn't touch who's eligible and who is not eligible. Our laws stay the same in those categories. And so folks that have no legal status or no legal eligibility to these programs simply just generally don't access them in general. There are a few groups of immigrants that are exempted and are allowed to use these services. And as you say, these are groups that we've already identified as having a real essential need. So folks that are fleeing violence in their home country and have gotten asylum, or victims of violence, domestic violence, these are the type of groups that use these services, and they're allowed to do so by law. And this law doesn't actually, this new proposal doesn't affect these groups.
So, does that mean, say, a foreign student who's here on a student visa and who may someday stay in this country, maybe marry a citizen or obtain a work visa and then eventually apply for their green card, that if that person now, say, takes advantage of food stamps or Section 8 housing because they can't make ends meet, they would be jeopardizing their future if this proposed regulation actually is accepted and becomes part of the law of the land, that they would be possibly jeopardizing their future ability to become a legal resident?
Possibly, yes. So this law, if comes into effect, really focuses on the last 3 years before somebody applies for a benefit. So somebody that has required these services and qualifies for them, if they then have a way to get permanent residency within the next 3 years, those are the folks that will be affected.
When the government says that this regulation protects American taxpayers, what are they talking about?
Well, I'm not quite sure. Here the confusion for me is that most of these immigrant families are also paying into the tax base, and I feel like it protects my tax dollars personally, that I have good safety net programs in place for my community, which saves us many costs down the line. So I think I would disagree with that entire premise.
So I think what you said was a really critical issue, which is that, of course, immigrants do pay various taxes at various times, depending upon what their status is, what their job situation is. There are taxes that get fed into the system. There have been several estimates and studies. It's not easy to get an accurate count because, of course, there's a population that part of this population lives in the shadow of those that are completely undocumented. But even those immigrants that do have legal status here, but not residency, You know, it's not always easy to get their information. Now, there is another phenomenon that has also emerged around immigration, and I'm wondering if you can discuss that, which is this idea that the government has the right to revoke the citizenship of naturalized citizens. So people who weren't born here, but people like me who become naturalized citizens, once you are a citizen, we have assumed, you know, for a very long time, we've assumed once you become a citizen, you cannot be deported. You cannot, you know, lose. You have the same rights as a natural born citizen, minus a few things such as running for president. Is that no longer true under Trump?
Well, you know, it's definitely true that they are launching a broad scale attack on what it means to be an immigrant and part of an immigrant family. And that includes this focus on denaturalization. Now, it is true that if there was fraud in the naturalization process, it is possible for someone to be denaturalized. What we're seeing now is just really, again, amplification of this negative message that increases the uncertainty and fear for immigrant families at all levels, those that have been here long term and are naturalized citizens, down to those that need basic services for which they qualify. And, you know, that denaturalization process, the laws have not changed. What we've seen instead is a keen interest by our current government to try to track down those that it can apply our denaturalization laws to. So we're living in a state where there's lots of uncertainty, this feeling that no matter what you do, that they might, you know, come after you. And this law that is proposed now on public charge is just one more cog in that machine, or one more piece of that rhetoric. And even though I can come up with many legal ways that this won't affect a lot of people directly, the harm is already there. We're seeing disenrollment from critical services for folks that this law won't in practice actually touch. We're seeing disenrollment from immigrant families, even those that are permanent residents and eligible to naturalize. And so what we're seeing is that the harm of the language has already happened, even if I, as a lawyer, can whittle away at who it will actually impact.
I see. So that generating of fear, which seems to be the actual goal, is unfortunately what's happening. On the issue of the denaturalization, that used to be something like 10 or 11 a year. After Trump came in, they've referred almost 100 cases for denaturalization, and the ACLU says that there could be thousands targeted. That doesn't mean that they will be successful, but there could be thousands targeted. And that in general, this issue of denaturalization was aimed at Nazis and other war criminals trying to escape prosecution from their governments by committing fraud in their applications here in the United States. I mean, that's just kind of, so as you said, the law exists on the books, but it's been applied in these extreme cases. I mean, now people like me are afraid for our rights who've become naturalized citizens, and that's what they want.
Yeah. And so the heart of these laws, of our immigration laws, seem to be getting turned inside out by this administration. As you mentioned, that the clauses around naturalization were really meant for extreme circumstances. And yet we're seeing it an attempt to use these as tools for a broad scale attack on those that were not born here. We see that same thing happening in these other provisions, this public charge provision, as well as other areas of immigration law, where, you know, pieces of the law that have been on the books for a long time for extreme circumstances are getting dusted off to create a lot of alarm in our communities.
The Washington Post in late August had also reported that there were instances of the U.S. government, of the Department of Homeland Security, denying passports to Americans who live along the border and questioning their citizenship. I imagine they're not targeting white Americans living along the border, that it's the brown-skinned ones with the Latino-sounding names that are the ones whose citizenship is being questioned.
That's certainly my understanding. We've heard similar anecdotes from other parts of the country where, you know, when we discussed those news pieces in other circles, we've learned that same type of process of scrutiny and disbelief has been applied to Latino Americans in the Central Valley of California and other places along the border as well.
I want to go back to what you said earlier about this idea of the public charge, which is this, which is the proposed regulation to curb residency applications for people who've been on used public assistance. That definition of the public charge, what exactly is, I understand that's sort of an immigration, legal immigration definition. Is that right?
That's right. So this idea that we scrutinize folks that we think are likely to become a public charge is one of the rules applied to someone seeking a green card in the United States. And for decades, we've had set in stone policies around this law. We have understood for years in our immigrant law communities and those that serve immigrants that this standard of a public charge is someone who is likely to become primarily dependent on the government for support. And that seems to fit my notion of this term, public charge. The current proposal instead is targeting any use of these benefits that you and I discussed earlier. Housing, Medicaid, which is basic health care, is someone even with minimal use deemed to be a public charge, which seems to go afoul of, again, what that initial intent was behind this law.
Does this create a system or just even an impression, because that's basically what this government is pushing for, does this seek to create an impression that America is open to wealthy immigrants and that's about it?
I think that's right. I also think it's really just an attack on keeping our families together and what it means to be a unified family. I would say that beyond just the concern about wealth, there's also to me this concern that it really is also about what ethnicities, race, who we favor and who we don't. And I feel like that's all intertwined in some of these changes.
The changes that we're talking about are for legal immigration, right? And when Trump came into power, he came in promising to build a wall to curb undocumented immigration. And of course, he's done that. He's, you know, incredibly targeted undocumented immigrants, the family separation issue, arresting whole families, separating children from parents who have crossed to the border. So the attacks on undocumented immigrants have been absolutely severe, but he has also gone after legal immigration, as we're talking about now. And he's even talked about curbing what he calls chain migration, which is basically if you or I had a parent who lived in another country and wanted to live with them and bring them here to the U.S., as Melania Trump did for her parents, most likely, he wants to target that. This is an attack on all immigration, which I don't think his, at least, you know, many people in his base may not have expected either.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I focus on what it means to also have a society that values family and family unity and understands that we are all more productive and successful and in these units. Here, it's definitely an attack on these legal processes. It's an attack on your ability to go through that legal process to become a permanent resident. Similarly to this attack and fear that is getting created around naturalization, as you brought up earlier. And so both of these seem to me to be targeting those that have legal means to come. It's creating so much fear and uncertainty in the process that we get asked on a regular basis if people should, asking us if they should withdraw their applications because they are so afraid of what is meant by all this rhetoric and all these proposals.
So the idea is that if you enter the system in some way officially with your actual name, your address, because you're simply wanting to change your status from green card to say citizen, that the government will use that against you in the future, you know, will change the law and say, aha, now we know who you are and we're going to kick you out. That fear is quite real given what the government did to DACA recipients, right? The people who were enrolled in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Right. I mean, I think the one thing that this administration has done very successfully is create a climate of fear that we're all living in, and it creates bad decision-making, and it really threatens our communities. And this is the examples that we're seeing on the immigration side, where even though there are legal processes available, these types of proposals create so much fear and uncertainty in the process that people don't want to access them.
What advice, Erin, would you give to those people who might be in different legal statuses? Maybe they don't have legal status, but maybe they have the opportunity at some point to get legal status, or maybe they're looking to change their status and they just don't know where to go. We're at a point where, as you said, the fear is eclipsing proper decision making. To the detriment of these immigrants, that it's not clear to know what decision to take next on one's position because one doesn't know where this dangerous administration will go next.
I mean, that's right. The one thing that we still have, though, is that we do know what our statutes say, and our statutes are the laws passed by Congress that cannot be changed without congressional action. So for one period of my life now as a lawyer, I feel like it's a very empowering position to be in, to know that I can look to those laws for guidance and know with certainty that unless there's an act of Congress, I can rely on them. And so for those folks that are in these situations of trying to understand whether it's worth coming forward now to take a next step on their immigration path or for their families, I have a couple words to share, which is one is just get an immigration consultation with an expert or legal advocate. Do a check-in. Make sure that it's still okay for you and your family. And note that there's a lot more punch to the rhetoric than there is in the actual underpinnings of some of these policies for these legal processes like becoming a citizen or a permanent resident. And an attorney can help you navigate that process and decide whether you have negative factors that are in fact going to put you in harm's way or not. Most of these aspects of these processes, for instance, naturalization, the process to naturalize, has not been changed. There is no change to the eligibility requirements for a permanent resident to naturalize. And that's really important because we're getting questions daily about fears around their people's ability to naturalize and whether there's been change. And that would take an act of Congress.
Are there any resources that are available for free or low cost? Because some people might not have the money to hire an immigration lawyer. And also going back to the original new proposed legislation that we talked about, because it's a proposed legislation, will there be an opportunity for the public to weigh in on that proposal, for especially for citizens who might be the most, you know, natural born citizens who might be the most secure people in this country now?
Right. So when you were talking about the proposed legislation, are we referring to the public charge rule?
The public charge rule, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing to note is that it's not legislation. It's just a rule out of the agency. So if this rule in any way goes beyond or addresses things outside of what's allowed by the law passed by Congress, we can attack it in court. So it's a proposed rule.
And there's no public comment period on a proposed rule?
There is a public comment period. It is not yet started. When it gets published as a proposed rule in the Federal Register, there'll be notices going out, and then we would expect that we'll have 60 days to comment and offer our opinions about this proposal. And we encourage everyone to weigh in and share with the government what you think when this, in fact, gets published in the Federal Register. That should happen within the coming weeks.
And then if there are any recommendations for free or low-cost legal resources, does the ILRC have any such resources?
So on our website, ilrc.org, there are many free resources as well as links. But beyond our website, there are many tools now in the nonprofit community for screening for citizenship, assessing red flags. Additionally, beyond citizenship, there are many resources in local nonprofits for screening. You can come to the ILRC website to get some links and resources to what some of those organizations are. Another good way to figure out where to start is to look on the Immigrant Advocates Network that has a full national directory of trusted nonprofits and links to screening tools online that have been vetted and trusted by nonprofit advocates and legal resources.
Erin, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your website from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Erin Quinn is Senior Staff Attorney at the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. We've been discussing the new Homeland Security proposed rule curbing green cards for immigrants that might be on public assistance. And that rule will be in the Federal Registry at some point, and it's likely to be challenged in court. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.